This episode of the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast is brought to you in part by NAU, Country Insurance Company, your crop insurance specialists, now offering industrial hemp crop hail protection. Contact your crop insurance agent to learn more or call 888-628-6724 or go to naucountry.com. NAU Country Insurance Company, your crop insurance specialists, now offering hail protection for your hemp.
I've seen more than my share of farmers just take on a little bit more than they can chew in their first grow. And I've seen the complete opposite. I've seen people who started on 5 acres and then went to 20 acres.
That's Alex Seleznov, the president of Advanced Extraction, a hemp CBD company from Colorado. This is the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast. My name is Eric Herlock, and on today's show, we'll talk to Alex about his company and how the CBD industry could be affected by new regulations from the FDA. And plus, we'll get his advice for farmers looking to get into growing hemp. We'll also be doing our part to celebrate Hemp History Week, but first, let's catch up on a few things.
Industrial hemp.
Last week, the USDA's Office of General Counsel issued some additional guidance on industrial hemp. And here I'm going to be quoting the key conclusions from their legal opinion. Number one, as of the enactment of the 2018 Farm Bill on December 20, 2018, hemp has been removed from Schedule 1 of the Controlled Substances Act and is no longer a controlled substance. Number 2. After USDA publishes regulations implementing the new hemp production provisions of the 2018 Farm Bill contained in the Agricultural Marketing Act of 1946, states and Indian tribes may not prohibit the interstate transportation or shipment of hemp lawfully produced under a state or tribal plan or under a license issued under the USDA plan. Number 3. States and Indian tribes also may not prohibit the interstate transportation or shipment of hemp lawfully produced under the 2014 Farm Bill. Number 4. A person with a state or federal felony conviction relating to a controlled substance is subject to a 10-year ineligibility restriction on producing hemp under the Agricultural Marketing Act of 1946. An exception applies to a person who was lawfully growing hemp under the 2014 Farm Bill before December 20th, 2018, and whose conviction also occurred before that date. There you go. Thank you, USDA. Also last week, the Food and Drug Administration had a public hearing on CBD. And here's what Holly Lawrence at Forbes.com says about it. And I'm quoting here. At the FDA hearing, titled Scientific Data and Information About Products Containing Cannabis or Cannabis-Derived Compounds on its Maryland campus, one by one, more than 100 speakers testified before a panel of the agency's officials. They range from health professionals to academics to consumer advocates. As you might imagine, they provided widely contrasting views about CBD's benefits and risks. What most speakers agreed on was the need for federal CBD oversight for production quality, more testing and research, and better product labeling and dosing guidance. All right, that's from Forbes.com. In his prepared remarks for the hearing, the acting commissioner of food and drugs at FDA, Ned Sharpless, said, "We encourage all stakeholders, presenters, attendees, and those unable to participate in today's hearing to submit comments to our docket on this topic, which is open until July 2nd, 2019. So, okay, I will have a link to that FDA open docket on the show page for this episode. Okay, one more thing. So last week, I spent the day at the Cannabis World Congress and Business Expo in New York City. It was a big day for this country boy. I got to ride the train into the city, walk around with all the millions of people. And the expo itself was fantastic. I met a lot of great people in the cannabis industry, met new people, saw some old friends. I saw the people who made the Hemp House on Wheels. Their finished house looked amazing there on display at the expo. I ran into the good people from the National Hemp Association, Jeff and Erica and Les. But most of the expo seemed to revolve around CBD and THC, vaping, and that sort of thing. And what I found lacking was the presence of the more industrial uses of hemp. I wanted to see companies who are pushing the envelope and disrupting other industries through creative uses of hemp. Sure, I understand that CBD and THC are where the money is right now, but I want to see more fiber, more bioplastics, more paper products. I want to see the promise of hemp fulfilled. And I guess I need to be patient. So the tagline for the expo is cannabis means business. But let's not forget that hemp also means business.
Industrial hemp.
This episode of the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast is brought to you in part by the National Hemp Association. The National Hemp Association is a nonprofit organization committed to the growth and development of all aspects of the hemp industry. Learn how the National Hemp Association can help your hemp operation. Become a member today at nationalhempassociation.org. National Hemp Association, pushing progress. It's Hemp History Week here, not just on the podcast, but all over the world. It's the 10th annual Hemp History Week. This year it's June 3rd through June 9th, so happy Hemp History Week. And I thought I would take this occasion to share some interesting moments in the history of hemp. Now, obviously, hemp has a really long and old history, and an even older prehistory. This plant has been around forever. So I thought I would just focus on a few key things from the 20th century, which was a very tumultuous time for the hemp plant, to say the least. Okay, so my first moment from 20th century hemp history is July 1st, 1919, just about 100 years ago. This is the date on the top of the patent that was granted to George W. Schlichten for his decorticator machine, a machine that he invented to make it easier to process fiber-bearing plants, hemp especially. This machine apparently cut the labor costs of processing hemp stalks by something like a factor of 100. So Schlichten was born in Germany, he was living in New York State, and he put a bunch of his own money into making this machine. He applied for the patent in 1916 and was able to produce excellent hemp fiber, and of course the machine had a byproduct called hurd, which Schlichten knew, and you know too, can be made into paper. World War I was in progress, and U.S. newspapers were experiencing a shortage of wood pulp. And that's where Schlichten saw his opening. He wanted to find a newspaper company that would finance the manufacturing of paper from the hemp herds. He gave this presentation to some newspaper guys. He talked about the environmental impacts of deforestation, and he almost had them convinced, but ultimately he was denied the chance, and he and his machine faded into obscurity. Now, this story might be the root of those accepted theories that industry was threatened by hemp and therefore squashed the hemp industry. The paper industry, textile, oil industry, the synthetic fiber industry. So, anyway, George W. Schlichten. Okay, next up is D-Day. June 6, 1944, 75 years ago tomorrow, the Allied forces of the United States, Britain, and Canada began the invasion of Normandy. And you could argue that the fate of the world hinged on the success of this invasion. And it ultimately led to the defeat of the Nazis. But what does this have to do with hemp?
Rope for marine rigging and towing, for hay forks, derricks, and heavy-duty tackle.
Well, hemp played a supporting role, thanks to the Hemp for Victory program that the U.S. government had undertaken 2 years prior, where they encouraged American farmers to grow hundreds of thousands of acres of hemp for the war effort. See, the Japanese had captured the Philippines and cut off America's supply of Manila hemp, so the American farmers had to step up. And this hemp was used by the military in everything from rope rigging on ships to threads for the shoes for the soldiers to the webbing on the parachutes for the paratroopers. They say that every battleship required 34,000 feet of rope. So you can see hemp played a supporting role, even on D-Day. And let's not forget the more than 9,000 Allied soldiers who were killed or wounded that day on those beaches 75 years ago. Okay, and on a much lighter note, my last hemp history nugget takes place on August 28, 1964, in New York City at the Delmonico Hotel, where John, Paul, George, and Ringo were staying. They had a visit from a folk singer from Minnesota, a guy named Bob Dylan, who proceeded to introduce the Beatles to marijuana, thereby changing the course of music forever. Apparently, under the right circumstances, THC hemp can have profound musical consequences. And so the story goes that Bob was under the impression that the Beatles had already been introduced to marijuana, mostly because of the lyrics to the song I Wanna Hold Your Hand. The Beatles are singing, "I can't hide, I can't hide," but Dylan thought they were singing, "I get high, I get high." Well, I guess you can blame it on a simple twist of fate. Happy Hemp History Week, everybody. Alex Seleznov, welcome to the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast. Could you introduce yourself for us, please?
Yes, thank you so much for having me, Eric. My name is Alex Seleznov, as you indicated, president of Advanced Extraction. Advanced Extraction is a vertically integrated hemp CBD company founded in Colorado by myself in 2015. We have four major divisions: Greenhouse Growing System, which is our agricultural division; Advanced Plant Processing, which is our extraction and processing division; Alliance Nutra, which is our contract manufacturing division; and Pure Hemp Botanicals, which is our flagship brand.
Okay, and you said Pure Hemp Botanicals?
That's correct.
Okay, so how did you first get started in the hemp space?
So kind of two things led me to the hemp space. Background before those two things, I've always been interested in hemp and cannabis as a plant, its many uses. And I got the opportunity in 2012 to start working for one of the largest horticultural companies west of the Mississippi in Colorado. And that was a great experience for what was to come for me in the hemp industry. Company operated over 2 million square feet of greenhouse space across three different states. Wow. And that is kind of how I got introduced to the growing and horticulture plant side of the business.
And then how did you then make that leap into hemp?
Yeah, so at the end of 2014, I had some friends in Colorado that were involved in a hemp grow out here. At that point in time, the Farm Bill had just passed. And thankfully, due to Colorado's previous amendment to legalize marijuana, included in that bill, some of the great people who were involved in creating that bill, including Linda Parker, who started actually the National Hemp Association, which was then the Rocky Mountain Hemp Association, had the foresight to include hemp into Colorado's other cannabis, or really the marijuana bill. So actually hemp was already legal in Colorado, and there were a few individuals who were taking advantage of that. And then in connection with that and the passage of the 2014 Farm Bill, I saw an opportunity with the people that had introduced me to the crop and began Advanced Extraction in 2015.
When did you start to realize the medical benefits of CBD? Was there like a eureka moment for you with that?
Yeah, there were several. You know, it was fun to first experience with the crop and the actual cultivation and growing of hemp. Once I started consuming some CBD products, that was interesting. Of course, at first you didn't always know what you were consuming or how much of it. Things early on were difficult to understand. A lot of really, you know, crude oil-based products, or that black, a lot of people call RSO oil, was what a lot of products were utilized with. And then the industry just began moving so fast in the processing and refinement of CBD into distillate and then eventually isolate. But I think some of the biggest aha moments for me was really seeing how it impacted other people, not just myself, because, you know, you always wonder when you're taking an own product, particularly a product that you're making, you know, are you just, you know, envisioning something more than is really there because it's yours and it belongs to you and it's something that you're a part of. Right. But when Pure Hemp Botanicals began as a brand and we started offering the product into the marketplace, and it was just instant reaction, and the amount of emails and calls that we would get on a weekly basis of how it was helping people. And I still remember one of our initial customers, who's still a customer to this day, had a son with bone cancer who was practically bedridden. Mm-hmm. And after a couple weeks on our product, was having a better lifestyle than he had ever had. And again, to this day, those people are customers.
That's got to feel good to know you're helping so many people.
It does. And fortunately, we get to hear those stories. And it's one of the greatest things that I love to share with our employees too, because one of the downsides I've always said of having such a vertically integrated and broad reaching organization is the people who are selling the product don't necessarily always talk with the people who are growing the plants out in the greenhouse. And, mm-hmm. and therefore, a lot of those people don't get to experience some of these stories that our customer service team gets to experience all the time, reading emails and interacting directly with customers. Right. So we love to bring those stories out to our other employees in the greenhouse and the extraction operations, people who are packaging the product. It takes so much all the way through the channel to get a well-made product to the public. And it's nice when we get to share that feedback with all of our staff.
That's great. How many employees do you have?
So we have, this is the busy time of year, so we have a lot of additional help right now. So we're probably up to close to about 100 people this time of year, but regularly we're about 70 to 75 people.
Okay. And is all of your growing done under glass, or do you have any outdoor grows?
We definitely do outdoor growing. The bulk of the material is going to be grown outdoor. Obviously, it's less expensive to grow outdoor than it mm-hmm. is to grow indoor, whether that be in a warehouse or under glass. Definitely the benefits of growing indoor under glass versus warehouse, there can be several, but I love being in the sun, and sun-kissed plants are great, whether they're in a greenhouse or outdoor. But definitely to really expand and the amount of hemp and CBD that are required for this industry and where it's going and the potential for total usage, not just cross-country, but worldwide, is really demands that the product be grown in a farming agricultural mode.
How many acres are you growing?
So this year we'll have about a little over 250 acres outdoor. And then we also have several partner farms that we work with that grow product for us. And we also sell our clones into the marketplace. And that's been really one of the best outlets for us. If we require additional biomass, mm-hmm. is we're able to go and contact our customers who bought our plants. We already know how that material extracts, and we have confidence in it. So we're able to contact them and offer them to purchase back biomass.
So you mentioned, you know, the worldwide market. How big of a market do you think is out there, and sort of like what percentage are we at now?
Yeah, those are two good questions. I'll start with the first. You know, I mean, if you believe what a lot of people are saying, you know, I hear the number 20 billion thrown out fairly regularly as a market, kind of by 2022-23, I think.
Okay.
I think a lot of that is very dependent upon a lot of the multinational corporations getting into this, you know, okay. the Coca-Colas of the world and large scale corporations in our everyday products. You know, when it was funny, when CBD was very early adapter in 2015, 2016, people would say, well, what is CBD? And, you know, the best example I could think of was something like probiotics, whereas, you know,
right.
20 years ago, 30 years ago, nobody had heard probiotics. And then all of a sudden it was in everything.
Right.
And as far as where we are now, from the accounts that I see, it seems like right around maybe a billion, if that's, you know, being generous, but it's so hard to gauge, it seems like to me, because to me it actually feels like a much larger industry already.
Right.
And I don't know if it's how that information is being tracked and if all of it can be tracked, because if it's the business is being done under certain modes right now that are not being promoted or advertised necessarily as CBD because of the stigma and challenges that people have. The industry has a complete credit card processing crisis going on right now, as
right.
many in the industry know. Obviously challenges on the farming side with, you know, getting insurance for the crop, with USDA certifications and the rules that they're going to put in place. And then the biggest one hanging out there, the FDA.
And they're going to be making some decisions this summer, right? Where do you think that's going to go?
My crystal ball, Eric, has been broken for years. So I just stopped doing that type of forecasting. I'll forecast numbers, but not very good with what government entities will do.
Fair enough.
So I'll let that go through the process. Obviously, there, you know, we're an industry that is very involved, whether it's, you know, the organization that I'm directly involved in within the National Hemp Association, being a board member, and the change that we're working for and direction that we're trying to give to groups like NCIA, everything from the people that are in the supplement industry, APA. So there's a massive amount of, I think, input and pressure for the FDA and USDA to get this right. I think people realize that this isn't going to go away. You're not going to get this rabbit back in the hat. This cannabis is here to stay. And now it's just what type of framework is that going to look like? And I always prefer that term over certain other terms that are less desirable.
So best case scenario, there would be minimal regulation from FDA?
Yeah, I definitely think minimal is always good. You know, I think there's in any type of product that is being consumed, you want to know, particularly from a consumer standpoint, that there are some protections in place. You want to know that people are using quality product, that they're using quality standards, and that there's efficacy to the product that's being utilized. That being said, I think that entrepreneurial minds and business people want to be able to have flexibility with how that can be put into products and how those products can be generated. So I think definitely minimal regulation is going to be optimal, and we're going to have to see what that means, not just with the upcoming decisions, but I think how it evolves. And I think it is going to be something that evolves. I don't think it's going to be a one-time ruling that never changes. I think this is going to be an evolving market for some time.
Okay.
And that can be good. You know, that doesn't necessarily have to be a negative thing. It can be something that allows the industry to grow and allows improvements along the way.
How important do you think organic practices are in growing hemp for CBD?
So personally, I think organic is very important. We at Greenhouse Growing System utilize all organic practices. While we're not USDA certified, as we indicated, that's kind of a gray area right now as far as getting that status and mm-hmm. what states that status can be achieved. Utilizing OMRI certified products in the growing process is something that's certainly achievable right now. And as a person who's lives on a plant-based diet and is very dependent and influenced by plants, you know, when I go to the grocery store, I'm personally always looking to purchase organic and want to know that the products that I'm purchasing in general are made in that way.
How connected are you to the actual farmers growing your hemp?
So with the farmers, I mean, my interaction is mostly with our staff. So we have an excellent staff. Our vice president and manager of the greenhouse growing system division is Jason Stevenson, comes from over 25 years of horticultural experience. And him, along with Calvin Bailey, who's our agricultural manager, and Chad Bessler, who is our greenhouse manager, are the ones that really work with our growers, our farmers, whether they be the farmer that is farming directly in coordination with our programs, or just someone who's coming in to purchase clones. We had a really nice highlight moment last week when we shipped the first ever, as we're aware of, clones off to Kansas that were being planted there. We have three of our genetics that are on the Kansas certified genetic list for purchase there. Okay. Through their Department of Agriculture. And we had just a whole truck of clones going there. And it was very exciting whenever we had these new states come online and we're able to participate in that with those farmers.
Do you have any advice for would-be hemp farmers?
I always say start small. I'm sure the evolution and the technologies involved in hemp farming will continue to evolve. I've seen more than my share of farmers just take on a little bit more than they can chew in their first grow. Mm-hmm. And I've seen the complete opposite. I've seen people who started on 5 acres and then went to 20 acres and now we're up to 100 plus acres. And because they got to have that scale up experience, I think they become much more efficient, effective farmers with the crop, and it allows them to really learn and grow. There's definitely a lot of people out there that can help people get to larger numbers quickly. And really, that's just going to depend upon the level of farming that someone's already doing and the resources that they have available to them.
How can farmers avoid getting the short end of the stick?
Well, so it's a tough one. A lot of it depends upon what they're trying to achieve. You know, I don't at all mean to not promote or incentivize the farming of hemp that is for purposes outside of CBD. It just happens to be something that our company does not specialize in or offer. But the marketplace, again, very interested in personally in sustainability in the marketplace to be able to have not just CBD, but fiber, renewable resources, hempcrete, alternatives to paper. There are so many things that hemp can do, and that's going to be a huge part, ideally, of what this crop brings to not just, you know, our country, but the whole world. Sure. But obviously, the focus right now is on CBD, and that's what most people are looking to grow. So my comments there are always going to be very, very careful with seed. It's one of the reasons why we offer clones, because we know that we're going to give someone, you know, 10,000, 20,000 units that they order, and they're all female, and they're going to get flower.
Right.
When you're going from seed, I've seen so many horror stories from people purchasing seed. Every year we have farmers contacting us in late June, early July. Oh, I planted my crop, planted seeds. Oh, they're getting hermaphrodites. I got all these males. If you're planting a CBD crop, my recommendation, particularly if it's your first one and if you are going small, it's going to be to go from clones, because you have a level of certainty and confidence that you just can't get with seed.
All right. Alex Seleznov, president of Advanced Extraction, a vertically integrated hemp CBD company located in Colorado. All right. That just about does it for today's show. Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to do all the things, you know, the Instagram, LF Podcast Hemp. Send us email. Do you have story ideas? podcast@lancasterfarming.com. Subscribe to the newspaper at lancasterfarming.com/podcast deal. Okay, my name is Eric Herlock, digital editor, and until next time, I'll see you in the newspaper. Hey, it's me again. Okay, so the show's not totally over. Anyway, I just wanted to get back to Hemp History Week, because I think it's an important thing to realize that this plant, this crop, this industry has an incredibly rich history with stories from all over the place. So I did reach out to a few previous guests from the show to find out some of their favorite moments of hemp history. So I'm going to play those now.
Hi, this is Kristen Nichols. I'm the editor of Hemp Industry Daily in Denver, Colorado. And my favorite hemp history moment is in the fall of 2013 in a little town called Springfield, Colorado, near the Colorado-Kansas border. That fall, a kind of a maverick farmer planted some hemp. It was the first time any farmers in Colorado had tried it. This is before the federal government authorized even experimenting with hemp. And you had a crew of all volunteers going through some scraggly, sad-looking fields for no money, picking hemp, and you could just see the excitement in everyone's faces. It was a great day to just kind of celebrate the return of this crop. And you don't think of farmers as being bomb throwers or mavericks, but they were definitely taking a risk, risking federal arrest to bring hemp in. And that's my favorite hemp history moment to mark this Hemp History Week.
My name is Les Stark, and I'm a hemp historian. In Pennsylvania, we've had a fascinating history with hemp. We grew it for over 250 years from the very founding, when William Penn founded Pennsylvania in 1681. And one of the very first laws passed by the Pennsylvania General Assembly was enacted in 1683. It was called an Act for the Encouragement of Raising Hemp. In 1720, to 1870, in that 150 year time period, there were over 100 water powered mills for processing hemp fiber just in Lancaster County alone, and there were dozens more hemp mills in all of the surrounding counties.
All right. And now for real, today's show is history. Thank you all for listening. This show is copyright 2019 Lancaster Farming, part of the Steinman Communications family. Today's show was written, edited, recorded, and produced by Eric Herlock. Any music you hear that wasn't the Beatles or Bob Dylan is courtesy of Tin Bird Shadow. And the little snippet from the newsreel is from the Hemp for Victory film by the U.S. government. You can find a link to that on the show page for this episode. Okay, thank you all.
Industrial hemp.